19. The Treasury Department's business generates paperwork, and that paperwork can't just be thrown away. It must be stored. Of course, all businesses generate some paperwork. Many generate enough for it to be worthwhile to hire an outside company to store it all in a secure manner. This approach doesn't work for the Treasury because outside contractors cost more than simply buying the cheapest warehouse in the worst part of town, stuffing it full of boxes of paper, and hiring a guy to guard it. Outside contractors wasted money on things like air conditioning. The Treasury kept several such warehouses in Los Angeles. Miller and Murphy had visited them on more than one occasion, so they knew what to expect. They pulled up to the massive rollaway door in the beat-up old Ford Fairlane the department had left waiting for them at the rail yard. As instructed, they had waited until dark, and after a brief delay, they sprinted to the car, drove to the warehouse, and flashed the headlights. Or, in the case of this car, the one working headlight, three times. The security guard pushed the door open and let them in. Murphy pulled the car into the warehouse, turned the key, and waited roughly 10 seconds for the engine to finally die. The warehouse was only about one-third full of musty old papers, so there was plenty of room inside to park. Miller, Murphy, and Jimmy got out of the car. Here in the warehouse was the first chance any of them had gotten to look at the car in the light, and it was a good thing. If they had seen it clearly before, they might not have ridden in it voluntarily. The car gave one the impression that the faded paint was the only thing keeping the patches of rust together. The security guard looked young and very tired. He shook Agent Murphy's hand enthusiastically.
It's good to finally see you, gentlemen.
Yes, Murphy said. Sorry we're late. Security at the rail yard was heavier than expected. We got cornered and had to hide inside a shipment of sewer pipe until the coast was clear.
The guard released the handshake and walked over toward the corner of the warehouse floor. It was obviously his workstation, as it had a chair, a table, an old boombox, and a walkie-talkie. The rest of the room was nothing but tall shelves covered with boxes full of paper. The guard said,
"What's done is done. You're here now. If there's any trouble, just radio the supervisor. He'll send backup."
The guard hoisted a backpack up from the floor next to the chair and started toward the door. Agent Miller said,
"Wait a minute. Where are you going?"
The guard said,
"Home."
Miller said,
"Just hold your horses. You're being paid to guard this warehouse."
Yes, the guard explained. "From 5 p.m. until 1 a.m. It is now 1:45. I waited around an extra 45 minutes for you guys to turn up. You're welcome, by the way. And now I'm going home."
Agent Murphy stepped in to play the peacemaker.
"Okay, fair enough, kid. Go get some sleep. Now, where's your relief?"
Murphy pointed toward Jimmy.
"We should talk to him about where our associate here is going to sleep."
The guard said,
"You're my relief. Unless the table or the floor look comfortable, I'd suggest that he sleeps in that car of yours."
"What do you mean?"
Miller asked.
"We're not your relief. We're federal agents."
The guard said,
"Yeah, and the powers that be decided that if two armed federal agents were going to be here guarding a prisoner anyway, that paying for an armed guard just to watch the boxes of paper surrounding the prisoner was a waste of taxpayer money."
Miller said,
"We can't stay here. We were supposed to just drop our prisoner off and go home."
The guard said,
"Well, I'm sorry, but there's nobody here to drop your prisoner off with, so you're either going to have to leave him in charge here, or you'll have to stay here with him."
Murphy buried his face in his hands.
"Okay, look, Miller, none of this is the kid's fault. He's already put in a full day. It's the middle of the night. I say we let him get out of here."
The guard said a quick thank you and made tracks for the door. Before he'd made his escape, Murphy yelled,
"Hey, kid, one last question. Where's the bathroom?"
The guard said,
"There's a porta-john out back."
Agent Miller turned bright red.
He yelled,
"A port-a-john! We spent the last 5 days living in a boxcar! Our only bathroom was an open door, a four-pack of teepee, and a pint of Purell! Now we're back in civilization, and you tell us all we've got to use as a bathroom is a port-a-john?"
The guard shrugged.
"Yeah, sorry."
The guard paused and looked at the hand he'd used to shake with Agent Murphy.
"I don't suppose you've got any more of that Purell left, do you?"
In the end, it was decided that one of the agents would stay and keep an eye on Jimmy and the papers, while the other went home and got a shower and some sleep. Murphy volunteered to stay for the first watch, because nobody was convinced that Jimmy would survive the night if he was left alone with Agent Miller. Miller called a friend to come get him and take him home so that Murph and Jimmy could use the Fairlane as an emergency means of transportation and as a dormitory. 9 hours later, Miller returned in his own car. Murphy and Jimmy left in the Fairlane and went to Murphy's place. Murphy turned off all electronics, and they took turns showering and shaving. Once everyone was clean, rested, and ready, they reconvened at the warehouse. While they were gone, Miller had called in a favor from his brother, so there was now a camper parked in the warehouse. They would still have to leave to shower and buy groceries, but at least Jimmy and whichever agent was taking a turn guarding the place at night could live like civilized people. Or, at the very least, like civilized people who were camping. Now that they had set up housekeeping, they all agreed it was time to get to work. Miller went out and gathered everything on Jimmy's shopping list. He also stopped by the office to pick up a spare computer and to yell at anyone who dared ask him where he'd been. When he returned, Jimmy and Murphy helped him unload the car. As he hefted the case of canned chili over the lip of the trunk, Jimmy said,
"Gentlemen, if all goes according to plan, this should all be over very soon."
"All this crap is going to help you prove how all these people have been embezzling money and then disappearing for all these years?"
Agent Miller asked, carefully placing the telescope and tripod on the floor next to the chili.
"Yes,"
Jimmy said, returning to the car's trunk for the last bit of equipment. As he rummaged in the ancient car's enormous trunk, he said,
"You two set up the computer. It'll need to be connected to the internet. Will we need to have someone come and install that?"
Murphy said,
"No, I can tether it to my phone. It won't be a fast connection, but it'll work."
Jimmy came up from his expedition to the bottom of the trunk with a roll of kite string and a large red scented candle. Jimmy read the bottom of the candle.
"Cinnamon and holly berry. A little Christmassy, don't you think?"
Miller replied,
"It was on clearance,"
daring Jimmy to push the issue further. Jimmy wisely said,
"Fair enough."
He tucked the candle and the string under his arm and ripped open the plastic around the case of chili, picking up two cans. He started toward the camper, saying,
"You two tell me when you have the internet up and running."
"Yeah, will do, boss,"
Agent Miller said.
"And just what are you going to be doing while we're out here working?"
Jimmy said,
"I'll be heating up the chili,"
as he disappeared into the camper. An hour later, everything was set up. Agent Murphy was disappointed in himself that he hadn't figured out Jimmy's plan earlier, but Agent Miller was disappointed in Jimmy that he'd thought of the whole cockamamie thing in the first place, so it all balanced out. Miller and Murphy sat at the table with the computer between them. Miller held an empty chili can. The can had a hole punched in the bottom, and the string, which was coated in holiday-scented wax, stretched 100 feet to the far end of the warehouse, where Jimmy sat in a lawn chair, with the other empty can, the telescope perched on its tripod in front of him, and a steaming hot bowl of chili resting in his lap. Jimmy heard some noise emanate from the can, but couldn't make it out. He shouted into the can,
"You have to hold the string tight and enunciate clearly!"
He said it loud enough that the agents could probably hear him without the can. Agent Miller pulled the string so tight that it nearly came out of Jimmy's hand. Jimmy put his ear to the can and heard Agent Miller shout,
"I said this can smells like chili!"
Jimmy put his mouth to the can and said,
"Yes! That's why I specified a scented candle. Most of it is still in the camper if you want to light it up."
Jimmy took a spoonful of chili and watched the two men in the distance talk, then felt the line stretch tight again. He put his ear to the can.
"All right,"
the distant, tinny voice of Agent Miller said.
"Murph says he's tapped into Xerox's system. You know, you told us that what that Banks kid and all the rest of you did wasn't illegal. Well, I got news for you. Murph has already broken about a dozen laws just to get to this point."
Jimmy said,
"I didn't say it was legal. I said it wasn't illegal. And I was referring to the way he got his money, not the things he did to find out how to get the money. Besides, the way I'm showing you isn't the exact way he learned about this. It's the way I did."
Jimmy watched the screen through his telescope and sent directions through the cans and string telephone to help Agent Murphy navigate through the long disused vestiges of Xerox's computer system. They went down many a blind alley as Jimmy tried to guide their way from memory. Jimmy surprised himself on more than one occasion by remembering seemingly nonsensical commands and near-random strings of characters needed to make the ancient Unix system do what he wanted. Finally, after hours of searching, they found their way to the directory that Jimmy needed. He had dreamed of this moment, plotted, schemed, and worked toward this moment for 30 years, and now, through his cheap telescope, he could see the directory there on the screen, exactly as he remembered it. The directory held one file, which was named repository1-c.txt. Jimmy took his eye away from the telescope and said into the can,
"Open the file!"
Jimmy heard Agent Miller say,
"He's opening it."
After a second, Miller said,
"Okay."
Jimmy closed his eyes. A single tear rolled down his cheek. It was the happiest moment of his life. Agent Miller asked,
"Okay, Jimmy, what's the password?"
Jimmy's eyes snapped open.
"What do you mean, password? The file isn't password protected."
"I don't know what to tell you,"
Miller said.
"It's asking for a password."
Jimmy looked through the telescope. At the table, Agent Miller had his ear to the can. Agent Murphy asked,
"So does he know the password or not?"
Miller shushed his partner and listened intently to the can. Finally, Miller said,
"He says you must have opened the wrong file."
"There's only one file in the directory."
"I know. He says he's watching this time, and you should close it and try again."
Murphy closed the password window and left the screen displaying the directory for a moment so Jimmy could get a good look through his telescope. Then Murphy typed in the command to open the file, and the password dialog box opened, just as it had before. Agent Miller put his ear to the can. Even without the can, Murphy could hear that Jimmy was speaking and that he did not sound happy. A smile slowly spread across Agent Miller's lips.
"What's he saying?"
Agent Murphy asked. Miller shushed Murphy again. He continued listening, his smile growing wider. When he couldn't stand it anymore, Murphy asked again,
"What's he saying?"
Miller smiled and said,
"Nothing useful."
He kept his ear rooted firmly to the can.
"Then why are you listening to him?"
Murphy asked. Agent Miller said,
"It's not often I get to listen to somebody else get this angry."